Hello, hello, hello.
What up?
Welcome to The Plot Strikes Back. Bum, bum, bum. We are doing a take two of this episode because,
yeah.
Well, you listeners won't know this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. We wanted to do Independence Day before Independence Day.
And did.
And we did.
And there is a there's a cut that exists.
It's called the severely echo cut.
The echo cut.
That for some reason we try new things as far as recording goes, and sometimes there are trial and errors, as people who are in the same business as we are have experienced and dealt with. Things do happen in technology, that is absolutely correct. But nonetheless, we are here to talk about Independence Day. And take what two. A movie it is. Yes. Although this is the only version that our listeners are going to hear.
Yes. In theory.
Yeah. So, that being said, we'll just literally jump right into it. You know, it is definitely more than a cult classic. I feel like a lot of people, since the movie came out, have always enjoyed watching Independence Day.
You know what's crazy is... when we, slight sidebar, what's going to be funny is that I'm going to reference the original cut a couple of times, but it will only exist in Legends, right? I think it was on 4th of July and the day after I saw Independence Day memes galore.
Yeah.
And it was just hilarious because I felt like so many more people were discovering the movie. Maybe for the first time, or even just watching it
insane.
After a long time. Yeah, I was one when this movie came out. One and a half, actually, I think.
No, because this movie came out in 1996, so you were literally like 7 months old.
It come out in 96?
Yeah.
When?
It came out in July 3rd, 1996.
Year and a half, dude.
When were you born?
January.
95?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Duh. Okay. I thought you were 96. Just kidding.
Nah, man.
I should have done that.
I'm not that old.
So, again, obviously being very patriotic and coming out a day before Independence Day itself in 1996. So the marketing for it was pretty damn well done and pretty spot on. I don't think it gets any better than that.
That would have been a pretty rad opening weekend.
I mean, I remember seeing it with my parents at the time and just being blown away. I mean, thinking about being like a 10-year-old kid and seeing that movie in theaters, and again, theaters where you had to go wait in line for a seat.
Honestly, I miss those days. God, dude.
Yeah.
I do.
We
I
always
really
reference
miss those
days. Yeah, but I mean, you know, again, Will Smith, super popular because of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which I watched all the time as a kid.
Great show.
Jeff Goldblum was super popular at the time. Yeah. You know, The Fly. I mean, a couple other movies he was, you know, very popular in around that time frame in like the mid-90s. And
I did, and I wish I bookmarked it, but I do follow this page on Twitter, or X, I guess, whatever, where it dives into, and I know I've sent you...
yeah,
the threads, but there was one for Independence Day, and I did. It was interesting, the original cast choices that they were looking at. Like,
yeah.
I think they wanted Brad Pitt originally, for someone, and I can't remember who they had in mind for the president, but they ended up getting someone with more star power, which was Bill Pullman.
Yeah, I do remember you sending me something along those lines. I'm not sure if I can pull it up in time, but...
yeah, I can't remember. It was, last week?
Yeah, I mean, I was just watching something. I mean, same sort of situation, but I remember seeing something for, you know, the second Batman movie in, like, for instance, Danny DeVito playing the Penguin. They wanted Marlon Brando to be the Penguin.
What?
Yeah, dude, and it's so weird to maybe even think about...
wow, could you
Marlon
imagine
Brando playing the Penguin in that movie?
You know, it's always interesting to think about these almost castings
yeah.
that people wanted or studios wanted, and you're like, huh, really?
It's strange, and I feel like in some cases, the movies that turn out the way they did, like this one as an example, were meant to be. Whereas I think in other, there are other movies out there where you think about, oh, they were trying to get so-and-so for this movie, and you're like, oh my God, like they probably would have made this movie so much better. And again, it's,
I know it might be a little, lot of movies that are like that, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I think in some cases, if directors know who they want to play certain roles, right? Like Quentin Tarantino is very specific in who he wants to be in his movies. Christopher Nolan, very specific as to who he wants to be in his movies. Martin Scorsese, very specific as who he wants to be in those movies. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, those actors...
Wes Anderson.
Like, yeah, like, there's a number of directors out there. And those and the actors that are approached by those directors usually say yes and don't really find some sort of reason that, like, conflict, not going to make it in time. I'm, you know, I can't fit this into my schedule because I'm doing another shoot and it just, it's not going
to
work out.
Well, and then you get stuff where it's like, oh, they had to drop out because of a scheduling conflicts. And it's like, dang, man, could you imagine?
Right. Exactly. And I mean, I
like Marsha Ali as Blade.
Well, listen,
that, we just took a hard left turn and I do apologize, but that was the first thing that came to mind. I go, damn, could you imagine? How sad.
Well, I do think for the sake of looking at, I mean, I think that's a good example where you look at studios that might not have their ducks in a row, you know. And again, I do think for the sake of, this is a far more complex issue to go into, which we're not going to in this episode here, but keeping in mind, and again, I'll tie this into Independence Day. When you have a studio that has this idea and you've got, you know, who was this directed by? So this is directed by Roland Emmerich.
Wrote it over like a couple weeks.
Yeah. And then written by him and Dean Devlin. And so obviously, like, if you look at their combined filmography, right? You're going to love what Dean also worked on in 1998. Can you guess what it is?
I know what it is. I don't even care about that stupid movie.
Yeah, because it is the worst Godzilla movie. But, you know, then he also worked on The Patriot.
Great movie. Wow.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson. Jeez.
Ironically, Dean also worked on the sequel to Independence Day, Independence Day of Resurgence.
Oh.
And yeah, we don't.
I wonder if that was just a credit.
I had to go back and check, but it exists. So I just don't think it was a great thing. And again, like it wasn't good enough for Will Smith to come back to. Granted, Jeff Goldblum is in the movie, but he's not in it like a ton. He's not like the main actor like he was in the first one. And that being said, when you look at the cast that this movie has, you know, with Will Smith, with Bill Pullman, with Jeff Goldblum, you know, Jude Hirsch, Robert Loggia, Randy Quaid, Margaret Collin, Vivica Fox, like James Redhorn, like Adam Baldwin, who else is in this movie? Brett Spiner, who plays the doctor, right? Like, there's a ton of people, especially like some younger people in there. Harry Connick Jr. is in this, like, as a younger actor. Like, there's a ton of people in this movie that were very young in their career when this came out. And I think it's always interesting when you look at movies, kind of like when we talked about Saving Private Ryan.
Oh.
The young actors in that yeah. movie at the time, and then you look at, again, 10, 15, 20 years later, and look where they are, look what they've done in that time frame. So... And I think, again, when you look at the actors that we were, I think grateful to have in some aspects because of the work that they provided
yeah.
to like, again, you know, when you look at Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum's characters, you know, they're the two stars that are pulling in everything else. And we talked about this in our original take, but the characters are on the opposite ends of what they're personified as and how they live their lives, but yet they come together to literally save the earth.
Dude, I said it in the Echo Cut that this has to be studied on a screenwriting level and a filmmaking level, because this movie is so good when it comes to the characters, which are, I think, just as important as the plot. And it's just, it's got, I mean, you listed all of those characters and they all have arcs that are simple and explained and not convoluted, yet they all intertwine. Like, literally, they all intertwine.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. But it all makes sense.
Yeah. And if you're new to the podcast here, you know, the name implies that we do focus on the plot, and the plot is important, because if you don't have a good plot, then you don't have a good movie.
Yeah.
And for a sci-fi movie, which a lot of people might think, oh, lulz, you know, sci-fi can be cheesy. But there again, when you have a movie in the mid-90s that is trying to do some extravagant things with visual effects while including, some well-known actors and having different character arcs, and it being just centered around Independence Day, but also with an extraterrestrial invasion, it might sound cheesy to some people, but when you look at it and how it plays out and how they do like the day-to-day-to-day period, and like, you know, I love how this movie gives us a time frame.
Yeah.
Like when the outpost first gets this weird, you know, radio waves, this, you know, this signal, the frequency, it's like, what is this? Like, and it's like he puts the phone up to like the speaker and like they freak out, because it's like, wait, that's not normal. That's not nothing we've ever monitored before. And so they take it with this serious offense. Like, we need to do something. Like, we need to start getting people aware of the situation. And obviously when you've got Jeff Goldblum's character, David Levinson, he is the one that cracks the code when he realizes that they're using our own satellites against us. And again, like, you look at the top agencies that didn't figure it out, and it took the uncomfortable situation between him and his ex-wife, who works with the president. And again, I like how, and I think more movies and more people right now need to study films like this, when they go, look, we're going to set these characters. These characters have a past, but we don't really need to go into immense details.
That's what I'm saying.
And you go, okay, so listen, the president and David Levinson, right?
Down to a fight.
Yeah, what's his name? President Whitmore.
They've
had a conflict. Like, David punched the president before he was a president, that is.
Because he thought his wife at the time, now ex-wife, was cheating with the president before he was president.
And obviously, you can kind of surmise how it looked, but obviously it's not what it was. He was a little brash.
45 seconds of screen time to address that.
Yeah.
And even with the brilliant acting and great direction of this movie, you can understand within seconds that, like, oh wait, they actually hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's known.
Yeah, the fact that he's there is just like, we've got to put our past aside, because it won't matter if we're all dead. Yeah, and so it's one of those things where I think the writing and the intertwining of the characters is well done, because you kind of see where all that's going. And then literally on the other side of the country, you've got Will Smith's character, Captain Stephen Hiller, who's an F-18 pilot, and he has this desire, these dreams of being an astronaut with NASA. And those dreams come crashing down.
Well, do they?
Well, obviously, like, at the time, like, you realize, like, he gets his letter in the mail that doesn't work out. But what he realizes that he's about to face is an alien invasion. It's like, you're about to have a head-to-head conflict with something that's from outer space.
Yeah, you. It's in San Francisco, right? I think because you get that huge...
L.A., wasn't it?
Maybe it's L.A., yeah, it's L.A. And you get that really cool shot of the massive spaceship.
Yeah, I mean, when they first, that, like, you're just going to check the mail or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, I think it's a newspaper.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's like reading it, and then he's
everyone's
like,
leaving.
And he's looking around, and then you have that Jurassic Park moment where he, like, turns her head and looks at it.
Welcome to Independence Day.
I guess. <Ba-na-na>. apparently, I guess part of the pitch that they said was 15-mile-wide spaceships.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy to think you have a mothership that's dispatching
multiple
15-mile-wide spaceships, strategically, mind you, over different cities across the globe that are designed to be efficient in taking out civilization here.
Checkmate, baby.
And again, as we find out later on, how would they know to possibly come and go over these cities? And it's like, well, have you ever heard of a place called Area 51?
Oh my god.
And sure enough, I love it when Will Smith has had the encounter with the alien, right? And he hits it with one of the best memes, Welcome to Earth, and punches it right in the face and knocks it out. And that's what, and I like the fact, and again, continuity within the own universe, right? Because the doctor, the crazy looking doctor, what's his name?
Dude, he was crazy.
Dr. Okun, right? He says they're just as fragile as we are, because when this ship crash landed in the 60s, they all died. There was three of them, right? So,
57.
Well, yeah. Late 50s, early 60s. Essentially when all the secrecy was going on.
We'll round up.
Right. But
there's what, four of them?
Three
of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously the fourth one was alive, but when Will Smith punches it in the face, it got knocked out. So again, like, I mean, he had to have hit it pretty hard and dead on. Like, they have to have glass jaws.
What a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty weak, right? And you get that case of, okay, well, they're not, they might be weird and have like these kind of like psycho kinetic, I guess we'll just say like psychic abilities, right?
I think that's just how they talk. Yeah.
Yeah. They use like some sort of like telepathy, and cause they do it with Whitmore, and they do it through Okun, Dr. Okun. And you know, it's funny cause Will Smith goes, or Captain Hiller says, oh, don't worry, it's there. Right. Cause it, you've got the drunken father who, Randy Quaid is Russell Cass. Or Case, probably how they call it in the movie, but he's a former pilot from Vietnam, right? And he just does crop dusting now. But his whole shtick is, I was abducted by aliens. Maybe he was abducted by aliens, right? And I forget what decade it was, but he just says that he was abducted by aliens and he wants to pay them back. That's his whole thing. And you know, he's in that trailer getting wasted, and there's some other like rednecks that come in and they're making fun of him, you know, and then everything starts shaking and they're like, oh my god, there's aliens in the sky.
Spaceship.
Maybe this guy isn't so wild after all. And again, it's sort of like when you've got that weasel of on the staff of President Whitmore. Obviously, again, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Ugh.
But he's James Rebhorn plays Nim Zicki. He's the Secretary of Defense and the former CIA director. Isn't that so ironic? The
Not
CIA hiding
true.
Things. But you know what I think is kind of funny too in this movie when we watched it recently, even back in when they were filming this in 95, they make fun of the media. And how the media really just tries to emphasize what we should be seeing, what we should be hearing. They make fun of that at that moment. That in, is... in the mid-90s. So 30 years later, they're still doing the same thing.
But worse somehow.
But worse. It's a hell of a lot worse now. I mean, the media is you know, extremely toxic. And I think it's a little bit of satire that, you know, movies, when they just kind of put it in there. And they did it in a very subtle manner. And again, that's like, I've watched this movie so many times, but I just realized it for the first time. I'm like, wow. They made fun of the media in 1995. Huh. Weird. Good satirical writing. And again, it's just like one line. And I forgot who said it, but it might have been it might have either been Jeff Goldblum that said it, or it might have been his father, Jude Hirsch, who plays Julius Levinson, right? And again, just kind of ironic, but you know, even David's father has a little bit of a slight past where, you know, after his wife died, he stopped, you know, praying and being religious. And then, you know, through turn of events, it's kind of made him come for a circle and be, you know, religious again. And
yeah,
like when they're praying in the circle at Area 51, right? And there's like, it's like, come on, let's get together and we'll pray. And he's like, I'm not Jewish. And he's like, yeah, nobody's perfect. Like, dude, that was, again, great little humor joke there. You know, there is some humor here and there in the movie. And that's
a pretty good amount of it.
Yeah, but it's not like over the top, you know. And a lot of it is maybe based on maybe, you know, Will Smith's acting or some things that.
Didn't you say a lot of his stuff with Jeff Goldblum was improv?
I think so, yeah. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I'm on the echo cut. Yeah. I think I said that, which again was, you kind of expect that to come from Will Smith, you know, especially in at the time of his acting, right? You know, mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny to see how Jeff Goldblum, being the type of person he is, might kind of respond to it. And
but Jeff Goldblum,
yeah. And I know we mentioned this before, but for a movie again that had a budget of $75 million in the mid-90s, and the box office was $817.4 million in 1996, is bonkers.
Yeah,
it is insane. And you know what's interesting? After we did our first review, and I remember the ratings we gave it, which we'll get to again later. But I went back and I looked online to see what other people had rated this movie.
Yeah.
And I was insanely disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. I saw, and again, we don't like Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is,
we hate,
is corporate garbage.
Rotten Tomatoes.
It's primarily owned by NBC.
Ooh.
God, like, you don't think they would probably try to, you know, skew things and pay critics to review crappy movies and whatnot. But even the audience review gave it, like, the overall was like a 77%.
That is,
which it's funny,
disappointing.
Because it is. And I think a lot of the times whenever in conversation Independence Day gets mentioned, everyone's like, oh, God, love that movie. Oh, it's so good. Like, and no one's just like, it was mid, you know, or something like of those along those lines. And
let me find them.
And at that point, I'd be like, listen, buddy.
Listen, pal.
Listen, chief. We need to have a sit down and we need to have a talk about your inferences about this movie being okay. Because, and again, we know that everyone's entitled to their own opinions. We know that not everyone might be a big cinephile. They might not have studied filmography. They may not have studied writing to a certain extent like we have and others have. But damn, like,
just, 77?
Yeah.
You're letting me down, people.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's even like that people will give it less than an 80, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, disappointment for sure. But, yeah, crazy. But we'll get to our rating a little bit later. And obviously, it made a bunch of money through the course of being, you know, rented, and you know, hitting some insane numbers based on like being the quickest film to earn $150 million, and then, like, you know, approaching 200 million mark, and then, like, obviously, like, Star Wars The Phantom Menace comes in and it kind of, like, smashes that, you know, expectedly. But it made a ton of money. Just that is the point of all this. Like, it grossed a lot of money in the box office. You know, there's something that says that it sold over 69.26 million tickets in the U.S. and Canada, which is just think about that. Over 69 million tickets in the United States and Canada. That is crazy. And, you know, I think in some cases that maybe have a better scoring out there. I think CinemaScore is a more reliable source. They gave it an A on a score, or on a scale from A plus to F, and that's more.
See, that's good.
Yeah, and I think CinemaScore is,
it's realistic.
Is a more realistic base on the looking at, you know, the potential, and what films have to, you know, determine the script, characters, plot, everything. You know, getting back to the story itself, again, the point I was gonna make about the box office and, like, the budget, when you have, like, these effects, right, you know, and again, this is 1995 when you're doing these effects of, you know, blowing up whole buildings and cities, and you mentioned this, like, miniatures.
You know what I think makes it so good is that it's a really good mix of, well, at the time, obviously it was, you know, it wasn't too advanced, in, you know, the mid-90s for CG, yeah. But it's a great mix of practical and CG.
Yeah.
And I think studios can take a note.
Yeah.
That's probably best, and honestly, cheaper.
I mean, look at Godzilla Minus One.
Dude, and honestly, but look at Tenet. It was cheaper for Christopher Nolan to buy his own plane to crash into a building than do it with CG.
Yeah.
So it's like, why are you doing it? I just don't get...
Well, same anyway. Thing, right? Like, he built the bomb, right?
Oh, dude, what a legend.
So,
God, I love that movie.
But, and again, you get a better sense, and I feel like...
It seems more real.
Yeah, like, I think there's a better appreciation.
Yeah.
As someone that... you know, I don't know if I want to say, like, for people that admire film, but I feel like if you just enjoy a good time watching a show or a movie, and you realize that, hey, and someone said, like, hey, fun fact, this scene or this moment in the movie or the show, that was all practical effects. And go, oh, wow, so they didn't do all this on a computer?
Like, no, yeah. Man, they actually blew the White House up.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It was an huge, though. With an alien spaceship.
It was like, dude, I remember seeing a picture of it. It was this massive freaking miniature.
Well, I mean, look, you know, again, one of the, you know, probably arguably the greatest trilogy of all time, Peter Jackson used miniatures and practical effects,
dude,
for Lord of the Rings.
Minas
Tirith is all that a ginormous miniature, but
built on wood. That's just like, that one's so crazy.
I feel like you have a better appreciation as, like, man, they went into detail to make it look real enough, but had to obviously size it down for it to fit and to work. And then you add some, you know, some other little special effects on top of that. But again, like, it, you wouldn't know that unless someone told you.
Dude, Phantom Menace is another example.
Yeah.
The pod racing scene. It's like thousands of painted Q-tips.
Yeah.
And it's like...
crazy.
What? Man. Anyways, yeah. So this movie does a great job of combining practical and CG work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it so good.
And again, like, I think the profitability speaks for itself, you know, and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And again, you had some really cool shots. And I think I mentioned this on the other cut where, like, there was only one scene that to me, you kind of noticed it a little bit more. And again, like watching it in like 4K, where it's when Captain Hiller and David Levinson, when they get going out of the alien spaceship into space back to the mothership, and that little slight transition from leaving Earth and going into space, like you can kind of see like the outer lining of the small ship and going into the depths of space to where the mothership is sort of located, you know, farther outside of our, you know, orbit. And it's, but again, like it's fine. And I think even for the sake of when that ship enters the mothership, you get this sense of how enormous that mothership is, because it, like they say,
it's
like
huge.
It has its own like civilization in the ship. And again, the context is they moved their entire civilization from planet to planet to planet, like taking Lotus. Over all resources.
Yep.
So they're just like left. This. Yeah, it's almost like they're kind of like a Galactus, where they just kind of like devour planets and gaining the resources. But I think it's interesting because, and this is sort of like maybe delving into a little bit more of their lore itself, where they don't just find a planet and they just inhabit it, that planet. They just kind of go there, take what they need to continue to survive, and they keep going on. And it's sort of like, well, how many little aliens exist there? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, it's,
dude, I would say
it's probably like
billions.
Yeah, hundreds, like maybe tens or hundreds of billions.
The mothership, which I mean, you see through all of the shots, but it's huge. It's like there's air traffic control within the spaceships. It's like the giant cities, and they do contain their civilization. But that ship sent out, what, 30 plus?
Yeah. And like you think about, well, if
15-mile-wide spaceships.
And what if they had more? Just, you know, again, just
I did.
Docked, right? And so again, like you think, well, if there's 30, you know, 30, 15-mile-wide spaceships, I mean, dude, like that's only 450 miles worth of small ships.
That's it.
Which, that's not a lot, you know. 450 miles isn't a terribly huge ideal, but again, that's just of what they sent to Earth. There could have been a lot more.
Yeah,
there could be hundreds of more, maybe even 1,000 more that they had.
Well,
because it's like, let's say as an example,
sequel.
Well, this again, the sequel. The sequel broke.
Doesn't exist to me. Broke canon.
Yes, it broke its own canon, which again, like, it just
Hollywood, the canon breaker.
Well, again, this is why not every movie needs a sequel. Not every IP needs a sequel.
Some things are allowed to just be done.
Be one and done. That's why I'm hesitant about Gladiator 2.
You know what, dude? That's a good point, but I'm really excited for that trailer tomorrow because those pictures look... dude, I saw that one picture of Pedro Pascal, and I was like, yo.
I'm not even really...
He looks good.
You know what, though? The only character I'm really excited to see in that movie is Denzel Washington.
Yeah, man. I'm very excited to see him, too.
But, you know, we'll maybe get to that movie at some point, but...
Yeah.
Again, like I don't really have a desire to go. Like, no,
I'm out.
Yeah,
just kidding.
Besides my point, maybe in a flashback, you know, cameo, just
cameo.
But, ugh, God, hey guys, watch the sequel. But is the main actor in it? Well, maybe in a cameo.
Give me the original Gladiator 2 script that Russell Crowe read. Give me that one.
I know, right?
That one's supposed to be wild,
crazy.
Anyways,
so you've got the families that are separated, right? Like the first lady, she's on the other side because she didn't, you know, leave in time to meet up with her husband.
She was somewhere at some summit.
I think she's in Vegas.
Yeah,
if I
or
remember
somewhere.
Correctly.
Yeah, it had to have been there because she crashed over in Cali.
Yeah, and again, just she's injured, and by the time they meet up, she doesn't make it, you know, and slight. Sad part of the movie. And you know, I think for everything that kind of, again, like when you combine both sides of the country with the characters, you all gather at Area 51 and, you know, which, you know, but I think like, you know, David Levinson, he's trying to figure out more, right? You know, even after all this has happened, and when he gets there, and I think it's funny because President Whitmore's like, wait, you knew about this place as a CIA director, Nimzicki, and you didn't say a damn thing?
Well,
you know, but again, like he's just a weasel, and yeah. You know, I know
they call it plausible deniability.
Probably
that was his excuse.
Yeah, I like the, and we said this before, but the general, William Gray, he's the United States Marine general, commander of the Marine Corps, right? His character is modeled after
Patton.
George S. Patton.
Badass.
From
WW2. You know what's funny, though, is that can you imagine being the Area 51, like, guards being like, there's hundreds of vehicles coming here. Which, honestly, well, maybe not, because at that point you're...
Well, yeah, there were a ton of...
the world's already under attack globally.
Well, but again, they're all following the lead of Captain Hiller with Russell.
But they were just driving in the middle of the freaking desert before they picked him up.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
And then he's like, there's a military base that way. He goes, no, there's not. Area 51.
Yeah. So, trust me, it's there.
But, yeah, imagine being that guard being like, oh, yeah, I have to call someone.
Well, I mean, when you say, hey, there's an alien here, you might need to
like
check this out.
Like he said, should I leave him here with you?
Yeah. So that's the ticket. You know, that's the golden pass for them to all
everybody just
get to VIP to Area 51. And
yeah.
But again, like, where else are they going to go?
There is nowhere else to go.
Yeah, exactly. Cities have been annihilated. They're at war with a alien race that they don't know anything about. And you know, I think it's fascinating, too, where we made fun of them, but the doctors are trying to operate on the unconscious alien.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not really strange. Like, their hand's moving, and then, obviously, everything goes
haywire.
Yeah, you know, haywire, and... You know, they're like, what's going on? And there's a bunch of like smoke in the room. And then, you know, Dr. Okun's like face is like pressed up against the wall, and that there's like tentacles around it. And then it's speaking through him. It's like, release me.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
That was good.
He's like, what is it you want? It's like, you die.
And then he shows
Whitmore
the president his plan.
Yeah.
And then
stupid alien.
Idiot.
What an idiot.
And honestly,
from outer space, here's my plan.
My favorite part, the president's like, you know, because I guess it hurts.
Yeah.
Being shown the way to win.
If someone's in your mind, I'm sure it's like,
yeah,
like,
it probably hurts a little bit.
Like raped his brain, dude.
Yeah, that's true. I take it all back. You're right. Sorry, Pullman. And then the guy's like, is that glass bulletproof? He goes, no, sir.
that's like the typical action movie right there.
And then they just unload like 20 clips.
Yeah, a bunch of handguns.
And then he gets like shot back.
Yeah, like they hit him with like some like deagles and just like just flies back.
Oh man! If you can find one audio clip, please make it that one.
Maybe I will.
That one might be tough to find because it's pretty obscure. Yes,
maybe.
Sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah, dude, I love that. That was.
But
hilarious.
What's also funny is that from the opening titles,
mm-hmm.
you know it's going to be a '90s action movie. You're like, yep, that's what it is.
Yeah, sci-fi action. You know, and because you got dogfights with F-18s and aliens, and you know, and obviously, like Will Smith's got the only experience fighting them in flight, so he's the one that volunteers to go fly that thing. But I love that part where he's like, you really think you can fly these things? It's like, you really think you could do all that bull crap you talked about? And it's like, yeah, fair point. But I also love when David is, well, maybe not past his wit's end, but he's hitting the bottle pretty hard. And he's just like throwing all the trash around, and his father's looking for him.
Like in the break room or something?
No, it's in the same room like where the ship is.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, maybe we should. He's like, he says, maybe we should just trash this planet so they won't want it. You know, and it's just like, nah, not really. But
well,
but like he's like, you know, you want to catch cold, and then like that sparks. So wait a second. What'd you just say? He's like, you know, catch a cold. It's like, oh my God, Dad, you're a genius. He's like, what'd I say? And so he gets the idea of creating a computer virus.
Which, how do you create a virus against something you know nothing about?
Well, if I were incorporate techiness here.
Sum it up.
If they've been working for the past 30, 40 years.
Well, it's the 90s at this point, so I would say like 50 years. Yeah, 40 years.
Probably, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, 30, 34. You're right.
Yeah, but like I don't think they had the technology. I mean, even then, though, like at what point did they have the technology to really utilize computers on Earth, right?
Yeah.
So like even if you were saying like mid-70s, and granted, maybe they had it before in Area 51. I don't know. It could be the 60s. Who knows? But anyway, you think about them getting more ideas from a more advanced civilization and being like, okay, so we're going to create some better computers down here that the public world will know nothing about, because that's the whole point of secrecy. And obviously, if the CIA knows about it, no one else, even in other government organizations, not even the president, will know about it. So at that point, they've probably been working to understand their technology for decades. And obviously, like, they're like, no, it's online and it works, it hovers, but that's obviously
but that's it.
Asked with David. He goes, we don't even know what and it's funny because like even the stupid CIA director is like, we don't even know if this thing can fly. And he's like, buddy, release the clamps, and it starts hovering on its own. And I think, again, I think the idea that David was a bit of a genius, but he was trying to focus on something that really had no meaning. It was like, I want to save the Earth by recycling. And it's like, it's not really happening.
Yeah.
Right. And again, for an extraterrestrial civilization, alien race, that look, the state of the planet that it was in, that's good enough for them. Is the planet at that point bad? Is it broken? Because obviously, if it was broken, again, like he says it, if the planet was trashed, they wouldn't want it potentially. So, the way I look at it is, what he was trying to do wasn't working, and that's not what drove him to success. Like even his ex-wife was like, now he wants to get ambitious, you know, by coming up with this computer code while analyzing the system. And again, like he probably only had about a day to try and learn as much as he could.
Yeah.
And he didn't use like sophisticated coding at the time either. Like it was just like, I need something to create a virus that'll infiltrate their system to basically lock what they can see and what they can do, and to have, so they can regain control over their ship. And all they got to do is just fire a button with their own technology to send the nuke into like the little hub,
yep.
Right? Their little air traffic control tower. So, yeah. And again, it's a movie. So
great movie.
Like, oh, how could someone create a code that, listen, I know some fantastic developers, and you know, when you want to create something, sometimes people do it in a day.
Well, also, when you have to create something that will save the world,
you kind of have to work on it all night.
You're going to put some fire in there, you know?
Yeah. And he was working relentlessly, I think, over the course of the entire movie to try and figure something out.
Yeah.
And that's just what his character was based off of. And you know, there's the bit of a romantic scene when Captain Hiller and Jasmine, they get married, and that sort of, you know, unites David and his ex-wife again.
Yep.
You know, and again, like I mentioned, like now she says, like now he gets ambitious because he's like, well, who's going to do it? It's like, well, there's only two people, the guy who came up with the code to do it, and then the guy who's only fought them once in the air. So,
and kind of crashed.
I mean, yeah, but like it wasn't, you know.
Well, actually, no, he didn't. He if he didn't have to abandon the plane, I think he would have.
I think he would have beat it.
He would have been okay. Yeah. He was good.
And rematch.
Rematch.
But I love how the President Whitmore's like, he has enough of Nimzicki's crap. He's like, you're fired. He's like, he can't do that. She's like, pretty sure he can.
And he's the president. He's the
president, bud. Take a knee, bud. Go sit in that little prayer circle.
Yeah.
Useless.
Oh.
And I don't remember if I saw something, but oh, it was like a, that's right. It was one of the deleted scenes where I think we talked about in our first take where it was something stupid that had something to do with like Russell's kids and,
oh like yeah, the 8 minutes weird
love interest or something like that. I was like, it wasn't necessary.
Nah, it was all pretty unnecessary. It was mostly like dialogue stuff.
Yeah, but like,
but that was really about it.
And the other thing that they showed as far as kids was like Whitmore's daughter and then, Jasmine and
I'm scared
and Hiller's daughter son, which little Nicky, who was the son from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air too. Love and that. And yeah, it was just like, I'm scared, me too. And it's like, yeah, dude, there's kids.
Took 2 seconds. And it was a quick little cut in the middle of battle.
Yeah.
And then it goes right back to battle.
Yep.
Hey, dude, it's just, man, the editing, the writing, the directing of this movie is so good.
This was a well-edited movie. Like, it's a great pace.
Oh, yeah. How long is it?
It's like 2 hours.
Because it doesn't feel like that. It's pretty quick.
It says 145-minute runtime.
Okay.
But I think after credits, it's just, I mean, it's just like, so even then, like, you're looking over just over 2 hours. Just over
2 hours.
Which, again, felt fine to me.
Yeah, it was good. It
doesn't feel like a long movie whatsoever. I think even at that time, like that was like, that's a long movie. 3 or 4 years later, welcome to Lord of the Rings, buddy.
Oh, man.
Redefined. but I think for the sake of the offensive that the United States launches, right, when the president's like, he fires first missile, doesn't happen. He fires the second one and it hits. It's like, now we see victory at the end of the tunnel.
Yep.
Like the guys, our guys in space, they did it.
But you with know, that.
But there's a.
Comes a dogfight.
Right. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of things that have to happen. You need to stop the other ships. And so Russell sacrifices himself. He's like, hello, boys, I'm back, and just like,
and saves.
Yeah. And like, it's, you know, the funny thing, it's foreshadowing, right? Because it's like talking about he was probed.
Yep.
Right. And then he basically shoves it right up theirs.
Yep.
And I love that. It was so good. And then again, leave it to the United States to like send the plan through Morse code across all the other
to other
armies and factions and gathered forces across the entire, you know, earth to be like, the Americans, they've done it. And it's like, of course. Greatest military power in the world, baby. But like, also obviously it's an American movie, so of course it's gonna happen. But but I think in that case it's sort of you know, there were no enemies amongst humans. Like, you know, you've got everyone on Earth vying to unite and prosper. You know, they've got to beat the enemy. So they got to, it's like someone's got to figure out how to beat them. And sure enough, yeah, they did. So,
yep.
And then they launched the nuke, which is kind of funny because they light their stogies.
And they just gave it to them. Fat Lady Sings.
Yeah, Fat Lady Sings. And
the virus like pops up the little skull and crossbones.
And the alien's like, huh?
He's like,
oh, I'm scared of a little skull and crossbones on my computer screen. But like, they obviously fly out and barely make it, and they crash again on, and not too far from where they launched from.
And then the great theme music,
yeah,
hits. Oh, dude, what a great song.
Yep. And I mean, that's pretty much, you know, they get reunited with the families, the chicks, the dad, and everything like that. And, you know, all's well that ends well.
Yep.
So, what did you, do you remember what you gave it score-wise?
I think so.
I gave it a 94.
I remember being higher than you. Yeah. So I gave
you said like 95, right?
Yeah. I gave it like a 95.
Yeah.
It's just such a great movie. And I mean that literally, you know, like I said, I do think, you know, everybody, and you can probably attest to this too. Everybody always talks about, oh, if you want to know how to write a great script, read The Godfather, part one. Do you need to read this script if you want to know how to write a great script?
Especially in like the sci-fi realm.
Yeah, man, because it you have an alien invasion going on, but you have all of these characters dealing with all of their arcs all organically, seamlessly, in a just over 2-hour movie that nothing is left like unanswered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's just, this movie is so good to me and needs to be studied more and needs to be played every 4th of July, like Jaws.
And you know what's great about this, the script? So between Emmerich and Devlin, they wrote the script during a month-long vacation in Mexico. And then just one day after, they sent it out for consideration. And then Fox,
it was like a day later,
greenlit the screenplay.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, they started pre-production.
Yep.
And so it's just like,
you know what's funny is the only studio they didn't send it to was the studio they worked with for Stargate.
Yeah.
Whatever studio that was.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was 20th Century or Warner. I can't remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head either.
But yeah, like that's how good of a script it was.
Yeah.
You know what's sad is that it probably wouldn't be made now.
What do you mean?
You know, someone would look at this script and probably wouldn't even read it.
Oh, like, well, I mean, you say that, and then they came up with the sequel in 2016, like 8 years ago, and that got greenlit and was not a good movie, you know. So, granted, I think it could have been, I mean, a hell of a lot better, but I just
shouldn't
don't think
have existed.
Well, I don't think, I don't,
it doesn't exist.
I don't think they really had a legitimate script. Like
they didn't have an idea. You know, they're like, wait,
the plot was terrible.
They're going to come back and we're going to use their powers, like their machines against them.
What I would have said as far as the script idea goes was that
I wouldn't have
the alien that telepathically spoke to Whitmore, right? He, and again, like he's just this one alien out of billions. How would he really know what's going on? And again, I think the thing that wouldn't really have broken canon would have been like they go from planet to planet harvesting a ton of resources and they bring it back
to their own,
to their main planet.
That would make sense,
right? And then because the idea was like, oh, like, you know, they send an even bigger ship, but like then there's this like weird sphere like enemy of theirs that tries to reach Earth first.
Interesting.
To tell them that
they're coming
back.
Oh my god.
And again, I mentioned this in the last cut where like this sphere looked like it was like the traveler from Destiny. And which I remember when I saw the movie, I'm like, did they just copy off of Destiny, the video game? Like legit, here's I swear to god, and people out there, if you don't know what Destiny is, just do a little quick Google search or ask ChatGPT what is Destiny, the video game, because there's this white sphere called the Traveler that is very mysterious, and it comes to Earth to protect humanity, give humanity a fighting chance against, you know, several other factions of aliens out across the entire, you know, galaxy and universe that have seemingly also come to Earth and try to combat them. And it's essentially what happens in the sequel for Independence Day. Yeah, like, and they don't know the language that it speaks, and they're trying to, like, harm it, and it's like, I'm traveling, well, the I forget what they called it, the sphere in the sequel, but it's there to help, not cause an issue. And yeah, I was like, wow, I feel like they just copied off of, maybe got the idea. And again, maybe they didn't. Maybe they have no idea what the video game is, but for someone who plays a video game and obviously is, you know, deeply in that sort of story, but yeah, it's just so weird. And again, like, I think they missed the opportunity to provide a good speech, or they missed the opportunity to provide a good script and
yes, I agree.
A seemingly thoughtful plot for a sequel, and they just missed the ball entirely. And obviously that's why it was bad. That's why Will Smith was like, I am not coming back for this. Dude, the idea of we started utilizing their technology to build Earth up even better and profit and make the Earth a better place.
Mm.
And you learn that there were other ships that were started to harvest parts of the Earth, these giant craters. They had also sent out ships that are like drilling ships, right? And that's what Jeff Goldblum's character, David Levinson, was trying to figure out. And, you know, you've got more issues in this sequel than you do solutions.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just...
won't even waste my time.
They could have done something great with Hiller. And I know they kind of, you know, I know he was mentioned in it. And I forgot what the significance was. I think
the guy is his son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is just...
And who was it? I think it was Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, he's in it too.
That was in it, and he was like,
he was the other pilot.
Yeah, you know,
boo.
Yeah, just yeah. Jesse T. Usher was Dylan Hiller, stepson of the legendary Colonel Stephen Hiller.
Legendary.
Yep. So,
well. I mean,
anyway, don't watch the sequel. It is not worth your time to watch it. I mean, if you don't care about it, the funny thing is, it actually made money in the box office.
What was the budget?
Budget was $165 million.
Okay. Well, how much did it make?
It made $389.7 million. So actually doubled its budget.
You know what's sad? It's that a movie like that can make that much money. And then a great movie like Furiosa comes out and doesn't even come close. So sad.
Well, I think there were missed opportunities, but I also think the spacing between Independence Day and the sequel, you know?
Yeah.
Coming out like 20 years later. 20
years, yeah.
Yeah, so... I mean, I think that's why Fury Road was well received and made money.
Oh, dude,
because it had been a long time since Thunderdome had come out, right? People want to see original actors, original characters be in it. I think because you had Jeff Goldblum, you had Bill Pullman, you had
there was some Jude Hirsch.
Yeah, there Brent Spiner, the, you know, the Dr. Oaken, like, you had some people that were back in it, but then you had a couple old, you know, newer characters, right? You know, Jesse T. Usher, who plays A-Train on The Boys.
Oh
yeah, he's in it. And then you've got Liam Hemsworth, which obviously not as famous or as big as his, you know, his brother Chris.
Isn't he Geralt?
Oh, in The Witcher?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Season 4 ain't going to be that great. Man. Sorry.
I know.
Yeah, follow up by Henry Cavill.
Have fun Aegon. With that.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, look, it definitely made money. And it did well enough, but I don't even know what people rated that movie. Anyway, if for some reason you have not seen Independence Day, please go see it. It's great. Again, you don't have to see the sequel. It's not required. I mean, if you don't really care, and you're just
encouraged to not watch the sequel, actually.
Yeah, because it's gonna ruin some of the canon, you know. Yeah,
for sure.
And
it's not necessary to enjoy this movie. And enjoying this movie is all that matters.
Agreed. So, is there anything else you'd like to include about Independence Day?
No.
True.
That's all I got. Great movie. 95%. It's on Hulu. Watch it. If you own it, watch it.
Yeah, I watched it on Prime as well. I have it on Prime.
If you have Prime, watch it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got for you. Watch it.
Sweet. Well, that'll do it for us. Go follow us on Twitter or X. Nope. You can find us at Plot Strikes Back.
No, though.
And be sure to stick around for some more content. We have some content out on YouTube. You can follow us on our YouTube channel, and which is just the full name of our podcast. And we're going to have some guests on some future episodes, some people that we've been working with on some live streams on YouTube, covering the House of the Dragon, and which is an amazing show.
Oh, yeah.
So that's always on Sunday nights for our YouTube channel and friends. But yeah, that'll do it for us here on The Plot Strikes Back.